Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Sam Firestein.
I don't care how confident you are or how much game you think you have, you try limping up to a woman in an exoskeleton of braces.
That and more. But first, do you have a story about autism? I especially mean if you are an autistic person and have a story about that in your life. We would love to hear from you. You can pitch us your story very easily. All you need to know is at risk-show.com/submissions. And for everyone else, we keep brainstorming on more and more ways to create social events, workshops, story slams, pitch-a-thons, all sorts of other ways that you can connect with us and connect with other Risk listeners. And we'd love to hear your ideas about all that. And two great ways to keep up with all that is by following our Instagram, @RiskShow, where you can also see all of our amazing TikTok content. And you can sign up for our newsletter. If you just go to our website, look for the little yellow box at the top right-hand corner at risk-show.com.
We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Now here's the show. Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Young Holt Unlimited behind me now. I can't believe we've never used this song on the show. And then in the Risk theme mashup up top that we also just heard, we got to revisit, it's Risk Motherfucker by Morning Bell. And we're calling this week's episode Body Image. Whoo, I'll tell you, this is one of the toughest challenges that so many of us struggle with. from our society? I mean, let's face it, mostly our society. But also our habits of mind, our own instincts, you know? So many things trigger us toward dissatisfaction with our looks. I mean, I know that for some folks, suffering over body image issues can seem inescapable. Some folks have breakthrough moments of, you know, making big progress toward self-acceptance, big strides, you know, toward loving the bodies they're in. Some of those same folks, you know, lose ground with all of that at times and feel like they're right back where they were before they'd made peace with it all. And then there's the fact that, you know, no matter what, our bodies are always changing. You could have the most perfect diet and skincare routine and exercise, whatever, whatever the perfect ones of those things are. But you can't escape aging and accidents or illnesses. So I think it's helpful to hear stories like these, you know, reminders that so many of us have our ups and downs with these issues. You can certainly hear in these stories that you're not alone, and hopefully you find hearing them more helpful than not. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Sam Firestein. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that story. I mean, what he went through. It's a story that he shared this past March at our live show in LA. But before that, the oh-so-very charming Claire Hennessy. Claire has her own show called The Bonkers Brit Podcast. She runs 6 Feet Apart Productions out in San Francisco with Regina Stoops, who you just heard on the episode called The Unknown. So here is Claire Hennessy now with a story we call Zen and the Art of Seduction.
Tonight, I'm going to be revealing my 40-something, flabby, unfit post-kids body to the love of my life. And what seemed like such a good idea just a few weeks ago now feels like a form of agonising and humiliating slow death. I'm shaking as I put on some brand new, sexy, very expensive lingerie in preparation for this evening's upcoming festivities. My heart sinks at the sight of my bulging stomach and the saggy boobs and the fat thighs. Why on earth did I think jumping into bed with someone I've not set eyes on for over 30 years was such a good idea? He's going to take one look at me and run screaming for the hills. What the actual fuck have I been thinking? It's 2006 and I'm living in England, and body image and weight have been an issue for me most of my life. I think it started about the age of 10 when I was at middle school in England, and I put on a lot of weight suddenly and was bullied horribly by my so-called friend for about a year. Luckily then, I went away to boarding school at 11, and then I got into sports, especially hockey. And all that running around a large playing field in the pouring rain soon dropped all the pounds off me. On the outside, I was sort of normal looking, not really overweight anymore. But on the inside, I was still that fat little girl being called names and secretly stuffing my hurt feelings with ice cream. Over the next few years, despite feeling a bit chubby and unattractive, I began getting attention from boys. And I got my first boyfriend, Bug, when I was 13 years old. He cut a hole in the fence at the back of my high security prison, and I would sneak through and meet him in secret, and we'd hold hands and kiss for hours. Until, of course, we got caught by Matron and I got into a lot of trouble. When I left school, I also then left all my sports behind too. And of course, my weight started to rise and I found myself on one diet or another for years. And some with more success than others. I think my weight yo-yoed more than a cool girl's knickers. At one point in my mid-20s, the fat gods decided to give me a break, and I managed to diet down to my weight nirvana of a US size 6. And quite honestly, I looked fabulous. I felt like I could conquer the world. It was my holy grail of body sizes. And then I bloody well forgot where I put it, and I've been searching for it ever since. In 1991, well, actually just before 1991, I met my husband, and then in 1991, we got married, and that was during my Thin Claire time. The weight then gradually came back on, partly, I think, you know, due to being in a happy, stable relationship, and the joy of not having to wear Spanx and pick at tasteless salads on date with complete and utter strangers anymore. And to admit, I actually like chocolate pudding. Then, after having two kids, I never quite lost all the additional baby weight I put on, which I'd been reliably informed by all my friends would come off, that one of the side benefits of breastfeeding was that your post-birth fleshy spare tire would just somehow magically disappear, as if your hungry little parasite would suck it out of you with your milk. Of course, I hadn't started with a flat stomach, so I don't know what kind of black magic I was expecting. I never seemed to have the time or energy, or quite frankly, the inclination, to put into exercising and cooking healthier meals. And all those spare fish fingers and chicken nuggets, which seemed to make their way into my stomach instead of the bin. So a few years go by, and then during another vicious, horrible argument with my husband, I pointed out that we didn't seem to have much sex anymore, there wasn't much intimacy, and then my husband suddenly admits he doesn't really fancy me anymore, as I don't look as sexy as before I had the kids. Well, I want to kick him in the ghoulies, obviously, and I'm gutted. And I never let him see me naked after that, ever. And not surprisingly, in 2003, we split up. Now, afterwards, I don't really feel like dating, because obviously my ruined body, so I go on a serious spiritual quest instead to find out who Claire is, what did I like, what should I want to do with the rest of my life, apart from just being a general slave and dog's body to my two demanding children. So I read a ton of books, I went on spiritual retreats, I learned different alternative healing methods, and I cleared out all negativity from my life. I began to learn about more important qualities than a flat stomach and tight upper arms, as if there was one. I discovered that being so busy all the time, burying myself in kids and work and chores and rushing around seeing friends, all of that was just really a means of ignoring what was really going on inside. I realised I had wibbly-wobbly boundaries, and I barely even knew what the word no meant. I also found out what an utter, complete and utter people pleaser I'd become, constantly seeking out the approval of other people. And I used to try and bend myself into whatever shape I thought other people wanted, but that was impossible and bloody exhausting because, of course, I had absolutely no idea what anybody wanted. Blimey, I hardly even knew what I wanted, for heaven's sake. Anyway, all this self-reflection was enlightening, if a tad painful. And although my inner self was much healthier, I must admit, I still felt a little bit nervous about my outer self. And then I was coming home from the pub, a rare Friday night out, a little bit worse for wear, and I thought it would be totally appropriate and a really good idea to check out old boyfriends on the internet. Now, this was obviously before Facebook and Instagram and almost before the mobile phone. And after a bit of searching on this British School Union website, I landed on that first boyfriend from when I was at boarding school. And that the picture he'd put up didn't actually look like anything like the boy in my memory, but I suppose it had been 30 years. He was quite nice looking, but he could have been a complete stranger for all I knew. So I double checked and his name was still Bug. Now, I couldn't imagine anybody else from his school with that nickname. So I thought, OK, I'm onto the right person. But he had a beard, he's wearing sunglasses, he was leaning up against a wall with a bottle of beer, and he said looked kind of cool. And I do remember at school, he was always a bit of a rebel. He used to sneak out to see me a lot, he'd sneak out to the pub a lot, and he was always getting caught and gated. I saw in this reunion website that he'd moved to live in California, which was very exciting from coming from Britain. But I did actually think that was far enough away from me so he wouldn't have to see me in the flesh. Because, of course, last time he'd seen me, I'd been in my perky teenage years. So, without thinking too much, obviously a little bit worse for wear, I quickly typed out this short email. And then I just stopped just for a second, little moment of sanity, with my finger over the send button and thought, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to email an old boyfriend living on the other side of the world? And then it was like my finger had a life of its own. It just clicked the send button. Oh my God. I jumped up and covered my face with my hands. What the hell have I just done? I rushed off the bed, cringing, thinking, wish I could take back the email, but had no technical ability to do that. So in the morning, with a really sore head, I just tried to open up my email, and then my heart jumped as I saw I'd got a response. It's exciting. So I opened up my email. Pulse was thudding through her veins, thinking, is he going to remember me? And he said, how could he forget all those walks up to my school and sitting in the playing fields and things like that? God, I was so relieved because I just thought he was going to say, who the hell are you and why are you emailing me? So I responded to his email, and then suddenly we're in this daily email correspondence, you know, finding out all what we've been up to the last 30 years. So he said he moved to live in California in 1990, and he seemed to be doing rather well for himself, which was quite surprising because he just was a little bit of a pothead at school. And he's now living just north of San Francisco with three kids and a swimming pool, which, coming from England, is the absolute height of luxury, particularly if you have sunshine. Now, 2 days after we start emailing, he sends me the song lyrics to this 70s one-hit wonder song, Afternoon Delight, by the Starland Vocal Band. And I had no idea that it was quite so suggestive. Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle? It's all things about rubbing sticks and stones together to spark igniting and working up an appetite and looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Like, for God's sake, that was a bit weird. A few more days goes past, and then he sings me the song Je T'aime. Thank Christ, I remember this song. It was banned from all the UK radio stations for being way too sexy and suggestive. There was lots of heavy breathing and moaning on the record, and the two people actually sound like they're making love on the record. Oh, that was a little bit strange. And then a week or so goes past, huge bunch, the biggest bunch I've ever been sent, of red roses appear on my doorstep. Oh, and then no more than 3 weeks after I sent that first stupid email, Bug suddenly declares his undying love for me, even though we haven't met in 3 decades. I was flabbergasted and, I have to admit, just a tad suspicious. I mean, really, he had absolutely no idea what he was doing. As a result of having birthed my two kids, I have a pelvic floor that was totally ruined. As you know, the rest of my body I'd not taken very well care of, and financial debt about the size of a small third world country. So after the shock had worn off, I insisted that he flies over to England to see if we still have some of our teenage chemistry. And then when he agreed, I panicked. My newfound spirituality was all very well in theory, but in practice, I forgot all my lofty ideals. I immediately allowed my fat inner child to take control, and she decided my body was not fit for human consumption, and that I urgently needed to cover it up with sexy underwear. Now, after only finding Bridget Jones size, huge big pants in my underwear drawer, I realised I had to go shopping. So with some hastily found courage in one hand and my trusty credit card in the other, I venture out into the terrifying world of intimate ladies' apparel. And what a bloody nightmare it was. Nowhere had bras to fit Madame's fuller figure, as one assistant so delicately put it. They were either gorgeous padded bras to suit skinny young girls with tiny tits, or monstrous over-the-shoulder boulder holders for the matronly woman who was certainly not expecting to have any rumpy-pumpy whilst wearing one. Dejected and thinking I would have to tell Bug maybe not to come, I'd make up some story about having some hideous sexually transmitted disease or something like that, I then stumbled into this lovely boutique lingerie store right on my doorstep that I'd somehow previously overlooked. The owner was kind and gentle, and she found me this beautiful lacy bra, which actually fit. It lifted and separated on all the right places and made me actually feel proud of my ginormous melons for the first time in my life. Looking down at it, I sighed. Oh, it's wonderful. Yes, it does fit you very well, she agreed. Is it for a special occasion? feel myself blushing as I explained. I wanted the lingerie for the blatant intent of seducing someone I'd not set eyes on for over 30 years. I realised I must sound a bit like a slut. Anyway, she just rushed off with a glint in her eye, saying she knew just the thing to go with my gorgeous new bra, and then insisted I try on these French-style panties. Well, they were higher-waisted than my normal knickers, covering my problem area tummy, and lacy with a flattering high leg. I was thrilled. Even my fleshy, cellulite-y bottom seemed a little more appealing when covered with all this lovely, delicate, soft material. So much better than being sliced in half by those awful bloody G-strings, which just disappear in for lunch, never to be seen again. As she wrapped everything beautifully in tissue paper, I actually did experience the first flutter of excitement since viewing my underwear drawer. God, I thought even Bridget Jones would be delighted. And now, here I am, wearing this wonderful new expensive lingerie, driving to meet Bug after 30 years. My heart is pounding, my palms are all sweaty, and I don't have butterflies in my stomach, I have demented bats. I arrive to our meeting place and see this small figure standing there. He's wearing this thick blue Aran sweater and a blue knitted hat, and for some reason, he looks a bit like a bank robber. And I still don't recognise the boy I went out with all those years ago, and I wonder if I should even let him into my car. However, he opens the door and sits down without waiting for an invitation. My heart leaps into my throat and I manage to squeak out, "Hello," and then give a small smile. Should we hug? Should we kiss? I don't know the etiquette for meeting an old boyfriend after so many bloody years. So I get really shy and I don't do either. I put the car into gear and drive him back to my house. I'm struck dumb with shyness, but luckily Bug talks non-stop, as I discover is his wont. When we arrive to my house, we sit on the sofa and just chat politely. And then Bug moves a bit nearer and we start kissing. His beard tickles me and I can't remember if this is how we used to kiss back at school or not, but it is quite nice. We kiss a bit longer and it becomes a bit more passionate and my body starts responding. Then Bug stands up, pulls me up, gives me another lingering kiss and leads me upstairs. When we get to my bedroom, nervously I go to light the candles I'd strategically placed earlier in the day. And then turning a minute later, I'm stunned to find Bug standing before me, already naked. In the snap of elastic, he's ripped off his bloody clothes, and now here he is, before me, stiff and proud. Bloody hell! That was quick! I freeze to the spot. I don't know where to look or what to do, and there's no mistaking Bug's passion. I don't know whether I imagine it or not, but did he just push his hips out towards me? I feel myself blushing like a teenager. However, he makes no move towards me, and my heart drops to my stomach a bit. Does he not want to undress me? Is he perhaps now having second thoughts? However, I do notice that his erect penis begs to differ. So, should I put on a show then? Be like some sexy stripper? However, I really know I wouldn't be able to pull that one off. I want to cover up my body, not show it off. Even though I am wearing my gorgeous, sexy, expensive lingerie. So, with much sucking in of stomach muscles, I slowly take off my shirt. Then, not daring to look at Bug, I bend down and start peeling off my jeans, self-consciously, but I have to admit, a little bit proudly, revealing my unfit, flabby body. Ta-da! Instead of gasping with delight and saying, "My goodness, Claire, you're so beautiful. And by the way, what gorgeous lingerie." Bug just turns around, lifts up the duvet and gets into bed on my side. I stand there for a moment as the dead weight of disappointment thuds in my gut and then quickly walk round to the other side of the bed and hide myself under the covers. Before I have a chance to say anything, however, Bug reaches across and pulls me over to him. Feeling my new bra, he quickly undoes it, takes it off and discards the most expensive item of underwear I've ever purchased without a backward glance. I want to shout, "Oi, do you know how much that cost?" He deals with my panties with almost the same haste, not seeming to notice their lacy, expensive gorgeousness. Later, obviously, I ask him whether he liked my new lingerie. Oh, I'm sorry, Claire. My eyesight's appalling and it was really dark in your bedroom with just the candles and I could hardly see anything. Oh, my God, I say. Do you know how much time and humiliation and trouble I went to buy the bloody things and how much they cost? Ah, he says, but I could feel you and you felt beautiful, Claire. I was only partly mollified. So after the initial rush to get naked, Bug now takes his time. He's passionate and tender and he's experienced and pretty skillful, I have to say. It's been about 2 years since I split up for my ex-husband and no one has seen me naked in that time. And Bug now seems to want to visit every bloody part of me. I wish I was thinner. I wished my boobs didn't fall into my armpits. And I'd wished I'd trimmed my lady garden. Bug doesn't seem to notice nor care, however, often stopping what he's doing to kiss me and tell me how gorgeous and sexy he finds me. I have to admit, it's a little bit awkward for me. He's completely uninhibited, but I still have to get used to each other's bodies and our nakedness and what turns each other on. But we do get there, slowly and enjoyably. And so it seems to me that Bug is really delivering on his promise and in true Bridget Jones fashion, loves me just the way I am. In the morning, I wake up with his arms around me, his body pressing into mine, and gentle but little insistent kisses on my neck. You're so sexy, Claire, he says. I cannot tell you how much last night meant to me. I've dreamed about this moment more times than you can imagine, and it's been even better in real life. His gorgeous brown eyes look at me full of love, and my heart flutters a bit. For me too. I was so nervous we wouldn't fancy each other. Claire, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. You've always been the one that got away. I was in love with you back at school. I'm still in love with you, and I don't think I'll ever stop loving you. Well, after my ex-husband's lack of any romantic sensibilities, this is nectar to my ears. We see each other every day of his short 5-day visit, and each time I feel more comfortable with him and the sex gets better. Over the next 3 years, we fly back and forth across the Atlantic about 14 times, introducing our kids, our families, our friends, some with a bit more success than others, because we do have quite a bit of drama from various different places, not least his teenage daughter and my ex-husband. But somehow we get through it, and it just makes our love a bit stronger. In November 2008, I then moved myself and my two kids to California and marry Bug. And this last December, we just celebrated 14 years of marriage. And he still looks at me like I'm some sort of amazing goddess he can't believe he gets to spend the rest of his life with. Of course, I do think he needs a much stronger prescription for his glasses. He's constantly praising me and telling me how much he loves me and finds my body sexy, so much that I can now actually walk stark naked in front of him with the lights on. And I now even happily sunbathing naked in my back garden, much to the horror of my kids if they pop in unannounced. Which is pretty incredible, really, considering that my body has headed south with all the restraint of a dog chasing a squirrel. I've continued my spiritual journey. I listen to various webinars from people who seem to know an awful lot more than I do. I go to workshops connecting to my inner child, because I do live in California now. I listen to my angels. I have access to my Akashic records, which are the archives of all your past lives. And I learn more about myself than I ever thought I wanted to know. I begin to find out how to forgive myself for all my massively horrible past mistakes. I learn that I'm in denial about most of my character flaws, such as being what I call myself now, a recovering drama queen. And I'm always offering unasked for, but very helpful advice to other people. Slowly, I think I'm maturing into a slightly nicer person. Now this, together with Bug's really open and unconditional adoration, has really helped me come to more of a place of self-acceptance. And I'm finally allowing myself to be who I am. Flabby stomach, thighs that rub together and are a bit of a fire risk, and a bottom that's getting nearer to the ground by the day. But now that I'm starting my 60th decade, God help me, I'm so happy that one of the best things I learned about all of this is to really to stop worrying so much what anybody else thinks and to make my opinion of myself be the most important.
Run, be pumpy. drive. The need to cure the itch was eating her alive. Deep into the forest, she ran without a pause until she reached a clearing and met with Santa Claus. He said,
"Hey, guess, young miss, what's here between my thighs? If you guess right, a ride on it, that'll be your prize."
Rumpy, bumpy, rumpy.
So one night when I was 22 years old, I went to take a bite of food and the sound of wood breaking just erupted out of the side of my face, which I found out later was the sound of my jaw ripping out of socket. Let that sink in. And the pain was immeasurable and I desperately needed to see a doctor. But where do you go when your face explodes? I didn't know. I had no idea. But where I eventually ended up was, say it with me, a musculoskeletal maxillofacial dentio-orthopedic specialist who took one look at me and said, "I need to run some tests." And he did. I had molds, impressions, x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, laser-sighted mapping. Like, I literally spent the next 6 months, no treatments, just testing, having every last millimeter of my face like digitally mapped and scanned and calibrated. And at the end of it, I'm sitting in his office, he has all of my records, and he holds up a picture of my face that's dissected by graph lines. And he says, "This area is genetically defective." Keep in mind, my jaw is still dislocated. "Are you saying my face is genetically defective?" Which is exactly what all of the science pointed to. Yes. And in order to correct it, he says, "In the first year, you'll wear a splint." On my face? Right? It was actually in my face. It was a Big Mac-sized hunk of urethane and metal that just, I had to wear it 24/7. I could take it out to eat and to talk. And otherwise, it was just imagine you're holding like a plastic Big Mac in your mouth for a year. It's quite a look. Which was then, in the second year, he said, would be replaced with braces. And not the nice ceramic ones, but full metal jackets. Which is exactly what every guy in his mid-20s wants as his, like, new fall collection, right? Like, that's just perfect. And then he goes, in the third year, keep in mind, like, just like the years are ticking off my life as he is talking. He goes, "In the third year," and this was the charm. He goes, "In the third year, we will surgically reset your face." And I say, "What do you mean by surgically reset?" And he goes, "We remove the bones and we reshape them, and then we screw them back." And he's like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." Remove? You're gonna saw my face off? You want to saw my face off? And he goes, he actually says to me, "Oh, you're making it sound a lot worse than it is." I'm like, "No, buddy, I think you're doing fine on your own." And I left. I was out of there. I'm like, screw this. I'm getting second, third, fourth, fifth opinions. And I did. And they all told me the exact same thing. "Oh, you need to see Ben Wasserstein. Oh, I'm going to send you to Benjamin Wasserstein. I don't do this, but you're in luck. Benjamin Wasserstein." I was like, "No, don't tell me that." They're like, why? He's the best. He goes all over the world training other doctors. And I go, because that's my doctor. It turned out that the maxillofacial Hannibal Lecter was the guy. And if he said, your face is getting cut off, then your face was literally getting, like, I'm like, I've never had a cavity. And he goes, well, that's a completely different, I'm like, I know, but still. Oh. So a couple of weeks later, I'm at the pharmacy, because really, where else would I be? And I am standing behind her. Like the her. Like if somehow you were to take like Bo Derek and Audrey Hepburn and magically like mix their genetics and create their daughter, this would have been her. And I was just gobsmacked. And she left. She never saw me. She left, which was good because not only was I standing there like gawking at her with my genetically defective, dislocated and now splinted face. I was also in a neck brace, an arm sling, a back brace, and a leg brace. Yeah, a couple of days after I got the news about my face, I got hit by a car. I was such a mess. And I looked so absurd. I looked like Quasimodo had gotten into like dental bondage. It was absurd. People would look at me like, one guy came up to me and goes, you're like on a hidden camera show, right? You're like punking people or something. No, this is me. It's all for real. And then, even worse, after that, I started seeing the Audrey Bo Derek girl everywhere I went. Like, everywhere. It didn't matter. I go to the post office. She's there buying stamps. I go to get coffee. She's there. She's at the supermarket. It doesn't matter. Like, I can't escape her. And it's killing me. It is just killing me. And it wasn't because she was beautiful, right? It's Los Angeles. Everybody is beautiful. It was just whatever about her, it struck that thing deep down in me, right? That intangible thing that just made her different. And I hadn't been that struck by a woman, not since the night I'd met my ex-girlfriend years earlier. The problem was all of the other things that kept hitting me. Because 7 months after I got hit by the car, I got hit by a drunk driver. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they nearly killed me. And they actually said to me, they apologized. They slurred at me. I'm sorry. I'm having a bad month. I'm like, you're having a bad month? Just 1 month? Really? Oh, I swear to God, if my arm hadn't been broken, I might have killed them. But my arm was broken. My injuries, they were so bad this time. Like, I was just a complete wreck. And on top of it, my right eye, it just twitched uncontrollably. It was just like all day long, 24/7. And I went to the doctors. I'm like, what do we do about the eye? What do we do about the eye? And they're like, oh, that's just, it's nothing. It's just a byproduct of the trauma. That's all. Just don't worry. I'm like, thanks. Oh, God, I am like, what has happened to me? What has happened? Like a year and a half earlier, I was on top of the world, right? I was working in production. I was on giant movies and TV shows. And I just had my first paid directing gig. It was small and it was goofy. And we shot it at the Church of Scientology. And I won't go into that. But I was like, I just got paid to direct. And you know, and now, like, I had just forget work. Work was over, right? I had just been reduced to a pile of human rubble. And my life was doctors and rehab and physical therapy and getting my braces tightened. And all I wanted, All I wanted at this point was I just wanted to meet her. I just wanted to talk to her and see, is there something there, right? Is there actually something there between us? Or is it just to torture me? And it wasn't about a lack of confidence, because before all of this, I had all the confidence in the world, right? But I don't care how confident you are or how much game you think you have. You try limping up to a woman in an exoskeleton of braces and slur at her with your genetically defective mouthful of twisted metal face and twitchy eye, right? And go, "Hey, I'm sorry." Like, "Oh, just look in the good eye. You know, you don't know me, but I see you everywhere." Like, it just, it wasn't going to happen. It wasn't. And I just kept thinking, if I can just get well enough. But by the time I got out of all of the body braces, it was literally time for me to go get my face sawed off. And that morning, I was lying in the OR on the operating table. And keep in mind, I have had years to prepare for this moment at this point. And I'm lying there going, I can't believe I'm getting my face sawed off today. Like, because there is, if you've never had your face sawed off, I'm just going to tell you, there's no preparing for it. Other than having your face sawed off, nothing prepares you to get your face sawed off. But then, of course, Wasserstein walks in and he looks down at me and he goes, "Are you ready to be made to look perfect?" Sure. Oh, and he also told me, he goes, "Now remember, you can expect some swelling and some discomfort." I'm like, okay. I got to tell you, bones don't like getting sawed off or screwed back in. And it felt like my face was on fire. And as far as the swelling went, what he should have said, "You know, Jay Leno, imagine his face as a Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade balloon." I swear my head was the size of a beach ball. And I was purple and yellow. I mean, I spent a week in the hospital. I looked so bad, the nurses got freaked out looking at me. You have to look so bad for nurses to get shook. And it didn't improve. It didn't improve. Because 6 weeks later, I'm sitting in Wasserstein's office. And he looks at me and he takes the calipers out of my ears. And he goes, "Well, we did it. You're perfect." I'm like, perfect? This is not perfect. My face doesn't work. And my face, it didn't. My face didn't work. I was completely numb. I could not feel a thing. I had no muscle control. My lips didn't work. I drooled uncontrollably. And everything I drank just went right in and then right out. And it would just run down my chin. But I wouldn't know it because I was so numb. And I would finally, I'd be like, "Why is my shirt so wet?" I was like, "Oh, right." And the kicker to all of this, I was on a liquid diet. 5 months, no solid food. I did at one point try to suckle some mashed potatoes. A friend took me to a diner and he goes, "Got a little thing on your chin." And I went to swipe it away and literally like a fistful of mashed potatoes just fell off my face. Like, it was ridiculous. And the other thing that Wasserstein says to me, he goes, "Look, I understand that you're upset, but what you really need to know, and I tried to tell you before, is it's going to take about a year for the bones and the muscle to settle." I'm like, a year, another year. I was like, fine. At this point, like, I was so bitter. I'm like, I'll stay home. I can stay home for a year. And I really tried, because every time I left the house, people would just look at me like, fuck. Like, fuck, man. Like, what? Fuck your fucking face. Like, it was just because I was so swollen and disfigured. It didn't look human. It just looked wrong. One friend made a joke. He was kind of like John Merrick had slept with a Klingon and made a baby or something, which, like, yeah, screw that guy. And but I looked terrible. And every time I looked in the mirror, I would get a jolt because it had completely changed my face. And my subconscious was, it needed time to catch up. And it would be a year or 2 years before I would know, like, oh, this is who I'm now going to be. But I didn't really understand that at the time. All I knew was, I'm not leaving the house. But then I did. One night, the cabin fever just got to me, and I left. It was late. It was a Sunday night. It was like 10 o'clock, and I just left. And I went to a coffee house because it was the early 90s, and like by law, that's all we were allowed to do. And I remember I was just sitting there staring at a wall. I had a cold cup of coffee in my hand. My chin was wet. My shirt was soaked. And I'm just staring into the abyss. And after a while, I heard some people come in. And then I heard, Sam? Sam, oh shit, Sam, is that you? Oh, and I turn and I look and I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. It was my buddy Nick. But he was with her, Audrey Boderick. I was just like, I could not believe it. And then Nick just starts going off like, fuck, dude, your face, Jesus Christ. I'd heard from Danny, but God damn, man, what the fuck did they do to you? Like, Jesus, man. I'm like, no, 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 no. And I'm just like looking at her. And then the next thing I know, they come and they sit down at my table. And I'm like, no. And she's like, hi. And he goes, oh, yeah, hey, Sam, this is Laura. Laura, Sam, like, hey, yeah, blah. And I'm like, she has a name. And it's not Aphrodite. It's Laura. It was just so human and normal, not anything I'd built her up to be in my head. And we started talking, and she's like, did you really have your face operated on? And I just went with the first thing. I was like, yeah, they do that when you go into witness relocation. And she actually laughed, and she goes, oh, is it safe to be sitting next to you? And I'm like, don't get in a car with me. And she's like, haha, why? What? I said, don't worry about it. But we started talking and chatting, and she was so kind and so engaging and so sweet. And I'm like, are we actually connecting? Like, is this real? Like, how do I get her number while she's on a date with Nick? And then I'm like, wait, I don't have to do that, but that's kind of shitty of you. But hey, go for broke. God hates you. And I can... And then I'm just like lost in this whirlwind, but I'm thinking like, I don't need to get it tonight. I see her everywhere and it's going to be okay. And then that's when I heard Nick say, oh man, I can't believe that you're like moving to New York. And I'm like, I'm not moving to New York. And she goes, no, I am. I'm like, really? She goes, yeah. And I said, when? And she said, soon. It wasn't soon. It was sooner than soon. Like, her things were packed. They were shipping. Like, she was gone. She was leaving. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, how is this possible? How is it possible that after all these years of unrequited torture, and we finally meet and we connect, and it was too late, and she was leaving. And I didn't know it at the time. But that was it. That was it. I never saw her again. And I remember I walked out of there that night and I just thought, what does it all mean? What does it all mean? And as soon as I figure it out, I'll let you know. Thank you.
My heart is pounding, my palms are all sweaty, and I don't have butterflies in my stomach. I have demented bats. I arrive to our meeting place and see this small figure standing there. He's wearing this thick
neck brace, an arm sling, a back brace, and a leg brace.
A And for some reason, he looks a bit
swollen and disfigured.
And I wonder if I should even let him into my car.
Oh, you're making it sound a lot worse than it is.
I jumped up and covered my face with my hands.
Which is exactly what every guy in his mid-20s wants.
However, he opens the door and sits down without waiting for an invitation.
Faye, I'm sorry. Just look in the good eye.
My heart leaps into my throat and I manage to squeak out, hello.
Hi.
And then give a small smile. So I put the car into gear and drive him back to my house.
Whoa.
I feel myself blushing as I explained. I wanted my ginormous melons for the blatant intent of seducing someone I'd not set eyes on.
Fuck. Sure?
I realised I must sound a bit like a slut.
And I'm like, are we actually connecting? Like, is this real?
When we arrive to my house, we sit on the sofa and just chat politely. Should we hug? Should we kiss?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the etiquette. And then we start kissing.
My chin was wet. My shirt was soaked.
There was lots of heavy breathing and moaning and rumpy pumpy.
And I'm lying there going, oh.
I have a pelvic floor that was totally ruined.
My jaw is still dislocated.
His gorgeous brown eyes look at me full of love, and my heart flutters a bit.
Whatever about her, it struck that thing deep down in me, right? That intangible thing. But that was it. I never saw her again.
Risk. This is Unknown Mortal Orchestra behind me now, and we just heard from Sam Firestein, who you can find on Twitter and Instagram at Sam Firestein. That was a story we call Where Do You Go When Your Face Explodes? And it was immediately followed by a little mashup of our two storytellers from today's episode, put together by our editor, Hope Brush. Stick to the very end of the episode for even more audio madness of that kin. And speaking of madness, before the break, we heard none other than Els DeShepper singing about Rumpy Pumpy. Because if there's any pumpy to be singing about, it's the rumpy kind. And it was Claire Hennessy who got us all thinking about Rumpy Pumpy this episode. I wanted to let you know over on our Patreon, you can hear how it sounded when Claire was reciting that story with other people present laughing that we have on microphone. It's kind of fun to hear that alternate version where you can hear all the reactions. So we'll make that one free for anyone to hear over at patreon.com/risk. And also there this week, we're featuring a story told by the hilarious Jimmy O. Yang of HBO's Silicon Valley and his amazing Amazon stand-up comedy special, Good Deal. That's a hit too. Here's a little of what Jimmy sounded like on Risk in LA.
It's not anything gangster. At first I was like, holy shit, they cut his toes off because he owed the mob money. He's like, no, it's diabetes. They got him.
So you can find that at patreon.com/risk. And folks, all of you, whether you're a Patreon member or not, please fill out the survey, What Do You Want? That's the name of the survey. It can be found on patreon.com/risk or over at the Risk Podcast Fans Discussion Group on Facebook. What Do You Want is a survey you can quickly fill out to let us know what other kinds of fan engagement, social events, bonus content, contests, educational opportunities, perks, merchandise. Get creative. And if you've been excited about the kind of participation you're able to do in other communities and have ideas from that, let us know. We want to hear your ideas. So keep them coming. And if you're having any trouble locating the survey, I'll send you a link if you just email me at kevin@risk-show.com.
We'll be right back. We're back.
Folks, we'll be back next week with a remarkable story by Kevin McGeehan about the kind of tensions that can arise in support groups or group therapy. And another by Tori Weston about having a sister who's different from her in a significant way. That's all next week. But folks, today's the day. Take a risk. Oh, oh, oh.
Are you ready to be made to look perfect? Now remember, you can expect some swelling and some discomfort. Oh, we did it. You're perfect.